EFL. It's the Football League podcast getting ready for the business end of the season. On this episode, though Crufts has been and gone, we've still got a Terriers expert on as Huddersfield get closer to new owners. There's double derby delirium in the Championship to preview. The scouting report returns. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. All right, gang, we are back and raring to go as the Championship returns this weekend. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams, joined by Adrian Clark and Sam Parkin. How are we doing, chaps?
Hello.
Hey, Matt.
No real rest for you two over the international break. There never is too, but I think it's probably been a good thing for some of the Championship sides to have a little bit of a breather. We're going to look ahead to some of the big games coming up this weekend soon. We'll do some news in a bit. But first, how good is this? The guys at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer where you can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It's for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this pod. It's 18 plus. And remember, always gamble responsibly. Clarkie, tell me something that's caught your eye during the international break before we crack on. I know you were at Oakwell, weren't you, for that absolute humdinger the other week.
It was fantastic. It really was. The atmosphere was incredible at Oakwell. And yeah, it was a good advert for League One, wasn't it? I don't think it was. I don't think Barnsley are a brilliant footballing side. They don't play that much attractive football, but they were really effective on the night. And yeah, it was a joy to be there, I've got to say. Sheffield Wednesday will be pleased that I didn't turn up at Cheltenham and that I'm not booked in for any more of their matches, because I was there for their two defeats in quick succession. I was at Forest Green as well. So yeah, I thought they were great at Barnsley, actually. It was a really good performance, but at Forest Green, pretty abysmal. But full credit, Duncan Ferguson, he came up with a game plan to nullify them, and it did the trick. And while I was there, took on the vegan sausage roll, and I took on a green lemonade. I don't know if either of you are familiar with one of those.
A green lemonade sounds better than a green sausage roll, I've got to be honest. Which did you prefer?
They were both nice. Honestly, yeah. I wouldn't really have known the difference with the sausage roll. And the green lemonade just tasted like one of those sort of traditional lemonades. So yeah, why not have a green one? Maybe that's the way forward.
Well done, Forest Green. Sam, you were at Peterborough v Derby on Saturday. Pretty much a full house. I'm guessing it was rocking. What did you dine on there?
We had a Nando's Deliveroo.
Of course they did.
About 1 o'clock. And the thing is, when I was driving up, I'd obviously seen the list of who was going to be working, and it did cross my mind. I thought, there's half a chance there could be some grub shipped in here. And when I saw, give her a mention, Poppy arrive, poked her head round the door where we were sat getting ready, I was like, oh, we're in business here. We're in business. I preempted it. So that was a nice little touch. I really enjoyed it, actually. First time in ages I missed football. And I think that was probably because League One was my domain. And you know what? London Road was a good ground for me. And just being on the pitch, it's old school London Road. Clarkie, I'm sure you've played there. The corridors, the dressing rooms, there's those little doors you just open and there's like a referee's. You know what I mean? It's so old school. I really enjoy it. And it was a great game as well. Two excellent sides. I think, you know, the best of League One maybe this season, along with some other powerhouses at that level. You know, Clarkie's already mentioned Sheffield Wednesday, but these are two really good sides. Great atmosphere. I was kind of right in the firing line. The Derby fans were getting a little irate with the officials towards the end. So I thought I might get a programme on my nut or something. But I went to Wimbledon, and this was quite a last minute decision from me because my partner had a mate over. So I turned down a nice sausage pappardelle and a bottle of Chianti to drive across to AFC Wimbledon. It's about half an hour, and I was really late, and I literally parked outside, got a space, walked in as the whistle was blowing with my steak pie, cup of tea and Snickers. And I really enjoyed it. Not, obviously, not the quality that I'd seen on the Saturday. Two struggling sides, but Wimbledon put on a really good show. And, yeah, obviously delighted for my mate Johnny Jackson to get a much-needed win. And quite funny seeing Fellini's post-match interview, but I'll save that for a little bit later.
Yeah, we're going to talk more about Wimbledon later on. As I say, we'll preview the weekend's games too. But first, let's get into some news. Now then, relegation threatened Huddersfield Town are a step closer to being taken over after it emerged that American businessman and owner of US championship side Sacramento Republic, Kevin M. Nagel, was named as the prospective new owner of the Terriers. He's agreed to buy the club from Chairman Dean Hoyle. He said, "I'm beyond pleased to announce that I've entered into an agreement with Dean Hoyle to purchase a full stake in Huddersfield Town." Joining us to tell us more is the Huddersfield Examiner's Stephen Chicken. This is good news, basically, isn't it? There's always a bit of trepidation these days when a takeover is announced and near, because you're never sure about the intentions of the new owners. But I'm guessing the fact that this guy already has a football club must be seen as a positive.
I think so. I think it's difficult for us to gauge in England, obviously, what the relation is between sort of American soccer and English football and what kind of investment is required in each. I think one thing that a lot of people noted as soon as Nagel was announced was that he was told he would need more money to fund an MLS expansion if he wanted to move up a division as had been planned a few years ago, and he'd had to bring a very wealthy investor on board, a billionaire who then dropped out, and means that they've not gone up to MLS. But then when you actually dig into it, buying an MLS expansion, as they call it, the expansion fee to get into that league is $325 million at the moment. So it's not a small amount of money, which is why you see so many American investors coming and buying English clubs. So I think fans will still have a lot of question marks, obviously, but I think the overriding emotion when the takeover was announced and before Nagel was named, because there was a few days where it was anonymous, was relief. You know, they've been in the bottom three for, well, the whole season, really, since August. The ownership situation has been in a real state of flux for about 18 months now, since Phil Hodgkinson, previously the 75% owner, his businesses went into administration. Dean Hoyle then stepped back in, who owned the other 25% of the club, and he had then stepped away as well in October on health grounds. So it felt very messy, led to a very uncertain future around the club, let alone any other rumours that were knocking about administration, etc. But Hoyle has bought back the share from Hodgkinson now and agreed this deal to sell it on to Gull. And I think everyone is quite relieved that it's done, even if they're a bit trepidatious about what comes next.
I guess also it's a sign of Nagel's commitment that he's doing this now, right? Because there must have been a temptation for him or for any other interested party to say, well, I'll leave it to the end of the season and then I'll knock a few quid off my offer if it turns out that Town are in League One rather than the Championship.
I'm sure that will have factored into any negotiations that went on, the fact that we don't know which league they're going to be in. It does look more likely League One than Championship as it stands. I think they'd need a couple more unexpected results for us to sort of change that assessment. When you look historically, I think they've only got about a 1 in 10 chance of survival on how other clubs have done from this position before. But you're right. I mean, it does, anyone that would have been bidding on this will have been well aware that there was a strong possibility that they might be relegated, and they would need to have a plan for sort of both scenarios, you would think.
Funny how football works, isn't it? You know, if you get another referee appointed in a playoff final, you might be looking at a Premier League campaign and all the money that brings rather than the League One. If we talk a little bit about on the pitch then, Stephen, it's Middlesbrough on Saturday. Obviously, that's got the nice little added narrative of it being Neil Warnock's most recent club before he took the Huddersfield job. It's a tricky old running, isn't it? You've got Middlesbrough, Watford, Blackburn next three. You've still got Sheffield United to play. That Cardiff game looks big. But I mean, we're not at the stage of the season now where they can say, oh, well, Middlesbrough, we don't expect to get anything from that. You might not expect, but the need is there, right? You can't be looking at games and writing them off because you're playing a team that are flying third in the table.
Exactly. There probably isn't, apart from Burnley maybe, there probably isn't a worse team you could come up against at the moment than Middlesbrough, unfortunately. Their recent results are scary. Routinely scoring sort of 3+ goals a game. Highest scoring away team in the division. But you're right. And I think everyone a few weeks ago thought Huddersfield were dead and buried, particularly after it was the 4-0 loss at home to Coventry that I think the realisation set in for everyone that relegation was more likely than not. And I think everyone had sort of accepted that was going to be their fate in terms of the fans, not in terms of the players, etc. But in terms of the fans, I think that result made everyone go, oh, yeah, this is happening. But they have been better since then. And they were a bit unlucky. They were held to a draw by Norwich. They did get a result against Millwall. Obviously, last time out, they looked much more solid against Bristol City and West Brom as well. They were quite unlucky to lose against West Brom. It was unlucky is maybe the wrong word. They gave away a very soft penalty, so you couldn't really argue the wrong result. But that they had played well in that game. They'd sort of made it quite an even game otherwise. So there's little signs that they can compete against some of the top half teams, which they had to do because of their fixture running. They had the hardest fixtures in the division coming into the last sort of 12 games of the season. And that Millwall game, I think, will have a few people, and I know has had a few people going, oh, hang on, is this on? Because if you can go and beat Millwall with the form they were in, sitting sixth in the table, then perhaps you can get a result against a Middlesbrough or a Watford or a Blackburn Rovers. But I think it's definitely hope, not expectation. I think realistically, if they were to get a point against Middlesbrough on Saturday, I think people would see that as a good point. And then you then try to get something more out of some of the more winnable games they've got coming up, like Swansea, for instance, or Reading or Cardiff. So we'll see how it goes. Anything's a bonus, but one thing's for sure, they're going to need a bit of luck to get a result against any of those teams because they don't score goals for this field, unfortunately.
All right, before I let you go, you're a big wrestling fan like I am. Tell me what's more likely than Huddersfield staying up or Brock Lesnar doing the job to Omos in LA this weekend?
I think Huddersfield staying up is more likely, isn't it? You can't see Brock signing up for that match otherwise, can you?
Fair enough. Probably neither of that likely to happen, truth be told. Stephen, we really appreciate your time today. Enjoy the rest of the season if you can. And yeah, thank you.
Cheers, mate.
Many thanks to Stephen Chicken for giving us the lowdown on Huddersfield. Now then, there's only been one managerial departure since we last met, as Graham Taylor said to that fourth official in Rotterdam in 1993. What sort of thing is happening here? It's Jim Bentley who said sayonara to Spotland after getting future endeavoured by Rochdale. He was only in charge for 7 months. He leaves with Dale bottom of League Two, 11 points from safety, 8 games left. Sam, Jim McNulty's already been caretaker once this season. It feels like they're just going to give it him for the rest of the campaign because it's not an attractive proposition, is it? You go there, there's a very, very high probability you're going to get a relegation on your CV. So, you know, unless you're a rookie or somebody desperate for work, are you going to be applying for the Rochdale job at the moment?
Yeah, I think people will still apply, Matt. Whether they want to take it now or wait until the summer is a different conversation. Yeah, I think he had a spell earlier, didn't he? And it didn't go particularly swimmingly. So my feeling is it could maybe get worse before it gets better, would be my hunch. Should have happened 10 games ago, in my opinion. That would have given Rochdale an opportunity of salvaging something. But it looks like it's obviously going to be a relegation. Going to be sad to see because they've been, you know, really entertaining side, I think. And they've actually tried to do things slightly differently, I think, in the last 2-3 years by playing quite expansive football. A couple of appointments, Brian Barrett-Murphy and then obviously Robbie Stockdale, I think, were of similar ilk. Didn't work start of the season under Stockdale, hence why Jim Bentley came in. And his tactical game plan probably wasn't as strong as what's been before. And that motivation, which they probably went for, has not been evident to get results either. So it's been a bit of a mess. One win in 12, 6 points in that time. Obviously had the 4-4 with Swindon. Kind of shoots of recovery in a couple of the home games, but not enough. Not enough. So yeah, going to be sad to see them go because obviously looking like they're going to drop out.
They've lost 24 of 38 league games, Clarkie. You can't turn that around, can you, at this stage of the season? It's asking too much to then say, right, you're going to need, what, probably 4 or 5 wins to get out? A team that's won 6 times all season, that just doesn't feel feasible to me.
I think they need more than 4 or 5 wins, Matt. I really do. I think they probably need 6 of 8. They've got 8 games left. need to win 6 of them and then hope for the best, because the teams that are just above the bottom two aren't going to lose every single game. So I think they're down. And look, they've won 6 of 38. That's the bottom line. Are they really going to win 6 of 8? I don't think so. I agree with Sam, actually. I think they're a good footballing team. Just a little bit of a soft touch this season defensively. Just conceded way too many goals. Obviously, the defeat to Crawley was the nail in the coffin, I think, for their chances. I don't know if you saw the statement that the club put out as well. They sort of said it was a little bit defeatist. I'll try and quote them correctly. It says, although EFL survival is now an extremely long shot, it's vital the rest of the season is used to prepare for next year, whatever division that may be in, as it will be hugely important in the history of our club. And what they're doing is they've employed some consultants to assess the club from top to bottom to see where they've gone wrong. Yeah, a little bit late for that possibly, but look, they're trying to do something about it, and you've got to give them a little bit of credit for that.
All right, well, whoever takes the job, they've got a real job on their hands. They play Wimbledon on Saturday. As I mentioned, we'll discuss the Dons later. Next today, though, we'll look ahead to some of the big games coming up this weekend. Well, it's all about the derbies in the Championship, not Derby County, of course. They're in League One. I'm talking matchups between local rivals, and we're going to start with Luton against Watford. Always a spicy fixture, but chuck in the Rob Edwards factor, and he'd gone from Tabasco to ghost pepper in a hiccup. Shortly after he got the gig, Rob was kind enough to come on the pod. Here's a clip of him playing with a very straight bat when we asked him about the game against the Hornets. When you were appointed, how quickly did you look at when the Watford game was coming up, and how much are you looking forward to that at Kenilworth Road on April Fool's Day as it stands?
Yeah, I was obviously reminded of that probably 100 times within the first 10 minutes of being announced. So I know that's a really big game, really big fixture. Clearly for me at the moment, my focus is on the next game, Cardiff tomorrow night. But yeah, I know that one's on the horizon, and that's the one everyone's looking forward to. It's a really, really big game, and One I'm looking forward to, but I'll only enjoy it if we come out on the right end of the result, obviously.
Sam, that was an exercise in diplomacy for any new manager listening there. He obviously didn't want to get into the real details of it, but I mean, this is a fixture which means so much to so many, but particularly to Rob Edwards, right? He'd be kidding himself if he said that he didn't really want to win this game more than any other this season.
Well, I'm not so sure. I think the fans, because of the way they are, you know, at Luton and Watford, they'll have let him know in no uncertain terms about the rivalry, which he probably doesn't know too much about, you know, prior to getting the job at Watford. And it was such a short spell. I don't think there's probably, you know, that feel for the club that you would have if you were there for a number of seasons. So I think it's all about the bigger picture, isn't it, for Rob Edwards? Of course he'll want to win this game, but I don't think there'll be too much animosity towards Watford, given that he's probably earned a few quid out of it. We all know what Watford have been over the last decade or so. It'll be ramped into him, if that's a phrase, rammed into him by the Luton supporters, how much they want to win this. And it'll be an amazing atmosphere. My only experience of this game was in a reserve fixture. I've told this anecdote before, in the wake of our Johnson's Paint Trophy success. So I probably still had a few beers swilling around inside me. And let me tell you, there was no love lost even in a Stiffs game. There was a few punters in. I think we won 4-0. And there was a few tackles flying in, etc. So it'll be a brilliant atmosphere. You look at the two teams right now, Luton won 4-6, defensively pretty immaculate. Those two games they haven't won, home to Millwall, away at Sunderland, probably should have taken maximum points. They're in really good nick. Only Middlesbrough and Burnley taking more points over the last 12. And you look at Watford in particular, that second half against Wigan, night and day from what they produced for Chris Wilder in the opening 45 minutes. So it's whether those 2 weeks on the training ground are probably going to have done some good for Wilder and that team. But Luton go into it as favourites. I think they'll look to press Watford's back three, especially those two outside ones. They did it brilliantly recently in their win over Sheffield United. I thought Rob Edwards showed his tactics really well on that evening. And Chris Wilder's got a job in his hand. He needs to get a bit of leadership in that side, whether it comes from Cathcart, Sema maybe, but without Deeney, obviously, Cabaselli, Cleverley, Gosling, I'd see a lack of leadership in that Watford side. And I think that's just one of the problems, really, that have been magnified throughout this season. But, you know, I'd rather have Chris Wilder in charge of a side than Slaven Bilic right now. I think tactically, there's no comparison. I think Slaven Bilic is the type of manager that you'd really want to play for. I'm sure it's quite a happy place day to day at the training ground. But I think Chris Wilder can get these guys in shape and probably finish the game strongly. So I wouldn't be surprised if this is a really tight game, but you'd have to favour Luton for what they've been producing over the last month.
Is it going to be a tactical game? I don't think it is. I think it's going to be a bit of a scrap. I certainly think Luton will be fired up to make it that case. And I think you hit on something that I wanted to mention. I don't see that leadership, not that much experience of environments like this in that Watford side. And with considering that Luton lost 4-0, by the way, in the reverse game, I think they'll be pumped up like never before. I really fancy a home win here. I think Luton are more than capable of beating Watford. And that probably would end Watford's chances of reaching the playoffs. I was speaking to a Norwich supporting friend of mine this week, and he was saying it would be absolutely disastrous if Norwich went back up to the Premier League this season. He doesn't think they will. But he said, if they do, it will be a disaster because they're absolutely not ready for it. And this cycle of getting embarrassed in the top flight, then coming back down, chasing it, coming back down. He just wants it to end. He wants a period of stability in the Championship where they can rebuild properly. And I think Watford fans want that too. I really do. This chasing the Premier League money, going for short-term fixes. They've lost their club, haven't they? The identity of their club, a family club, is dwindling. I think it might do them a bit of good if they were to stay in the Championship for at least another season, Watford, and try and just find themselves a bit.
Yeah, I guess they've got to keep the same coach for more than a cup of coffee in order for any stability to kind of come around. So Chris Wilder probably benefited from the 2 weeks with his squad. Tom Lockyer feels that it was good for Luton too, because they were running on fumes, or as he put it, I've got one of the cushiest jobs in the middle of a back three, and even I was struggling. So he's been happy to have a couple of weeks off. As Clarkie mentioned, Slaven Bilic is Watford beat Nathan Jones Luton 4-0 in the reverse in October. The last time Watford won at Kenilworth Road, Malky Mackay scored and Ashley Young was sent off. It was back in 2006. Although, to be fair, they've only played there once since, but big game in prospect at Kenilworth Road. And there's also a derby day in South Wales this weekend. Got to be the first time in a long time that Cardiff versus Swansea has been played at 3 o'clock on a Saturday, but that's when it'll kick off. Possibly in more than one sense, it'll kick off at the Cardiff City Stadium. 21st versus 16th. Difficult one to get a read on this, Adrian. I was wondering, and I put this in the running order, as to whether Cardiff actually come into this in a better place at the moment in terms of their overall mood, despite them being so close to the relegation zone. But then that win against Bristol City before the break for Swansea could be a real mood turner for them, and for Russell Martin in particular. He said that that win will relax them ahead of this one. You know, there's a bit of speculation about his future, but if he goes back-to-back wins against Bristol City and then Cardiff, he's a made man, isn't he?
I guess so, yeah. It was a big win, wasn't it, against Bristol City? And I think if you're a Swansea player playing Swansea-type football under Russell Martin, confidence is a huge factor. You need to want the ball and you need to be able to receive it in different areas and to try things. And when you're winning and when you're feeling better about yourself, that's so much easier than when results are going badly. And, you know, it's natural for one, two, three, four players maybe in a team to hide because it's like, oh, I don't really want the ball here. I'm going to make a mistake. That happens. And so I think they're more of a confidence team than maybe anyone else in the Championship, Swansea. I'd rather watch them than Cardiff. I'd rather have their squad, I think, than Cardiff. So they've got a lot of good players. I was looking at the bench for that game the other day against Bristol, and Ollie Cooper, Jamie Patterson, Morgan Whittaker all came off the bench. You know, it's got some quality there. They really have. But yeah, they've just been a little bit of a soft touch. I used that phrase earlier about Rochdale, and I think that is the case. And they're going to have to sort of toughen up for this game because Cardiff will come at them and they'll look to make sure they don't get beaten in the game. Their home form has been quite good, hasn't it, Cardiff's? They beat Reading, they beat Bristol City, and they drew with West Bromwich Albion. And considering Callum Robinson's been out, their leading scorer, that's not bad. I think the one that's really stepped up is Jaden Philogene, sort of one of the wide forwards. I think he's been quite impressive of late. So yeah, I don't expect a classic, do you? I think this will be quite low scoring, and I would lean, I think, towards Cardiff. I looked at their record, Cardiff, against bottom half teams at home this season. 9 games, 6 clean sheets. 4 wins, 4 draws, 1 defeat. So against teams that are around them in the table at home, Cardiff have been unbelievably solid. And then you flip it around in the 9 away games that Swansea have faced against bottom half teams. They've only lost twice. They've only conceded 8 goals. So I think it all adds up to a goalless draw.
I think Cardiff might take that based on recent history. Swansea have won the last 3 meetings by an aggregate score of 9-0, including a 4-0 win here last season, which amazingly saw them become the first team to do the league double in this fixture. And now they're looking to do it in back-to-back seasons. We should see how they get on. Now, not a derby, but certainly a crucial game in the battle to stay in the Championship in the Northwest. Wigan Athletic hosting Queen's Park Rangers. Wigan's players have now been paid their overdue wages, and CEO Mal Branigan has left his role at the club. Chairman Talal Al Hamad said late wage payment would never happen again because it's 2023. Defender Stephen Corker took to LinkedIn to voice his anger at the late payment. He said, "The lies us as players have been told by Wigan Athletic FC is absolutely scandalous." It means are absolutely scandalous. "There may be a reason for late payment once or twice, but for the boys to have experienced this four times this season is completely unacceptable." He then included a picture and a quote from WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. And modern football kind of hurts my head a bit. What I do know, though, Adrian, is that Wigan are 8 points from safety because they got docked through because of these money troubles. They've only won once since November the 12th. Can you remind me again why they sacked Liam Richardson?
The more you think about it, the more daft that decision to let Liam Richardson go looks. It was a mess under Colo Touré. Maloney has done okay without really getting enough victories to give you that belief that they're going to turn it around. I mean, they got decent draws, didn't they, recently against Coventry and against Watford. Maybe they sort of lucked it out a little bit at Watford. I think they only really had six shots in the entire match there. But look, considering they've not been paid or they had their wages late, they're two really creditable results. And they tell you that the dressing room haven't given up hope. They haven't down tools completely. And I was looking at their fixtures, Wigan. As much of a long shot as it is, they do play five of the bottom nine. So, and as we know, the bottom nine are kind of all in it at the wrong end of the championship. They do play five fellow relegation candidates. So if they can, you know, win four of those, for example, 4 6-pointers, they might just give themselves a chance. If they do, that would be miraculous, given obviously their form, but also the state of play at the club and the fact that most of the players will surely be looking for the exit this summer, given that there's no financial security at Wigan at all, no matter what the chairman says.
Yeah, can't be particularly happy dressing room at the moment. Right, Sam, take a deep breath and steel yourself as I ask you about your beloved Queen's Park Rangers. 6 points above the relegation zone. Gareth Ainsworth says they need two wins to stay up. Problem with that is they've had one this year and have lost seven of their last eight. This is their final game against a team below them in the table, which kind of underlines the significance of it. How are you feeling about their survival prospects? Have they got it in them to get those two wins? And will one of them come on Saturday?
I didn't know about the fixtures. It's been quite nice to not have to think about it for a fortnight, to be honest. I feel quite fresh today. The only thing I have seen is that there's been quite a lot of output from the club in regard to players back in training. Much welcome return of possibly Chair, Willock, I think Balogun, Laird. I may have missed a couple out there as well. So I think this game tactically will be really interesting. I had a little look at the numbers. I won't bore you with them, but obviously they were having more of the ball under Beale. The pass completion was up. It was slightly less under Neil Critchley. And it's obviously nosedived under Gareth Ainsworth. And I kind of backed him in that defeat to Birmingham, in that it was understandable when he hasn't got his technically best players that they can get between the lines and get dictate play available, then maybe going direct to two strikers is the way forward. So this will be interesting. Still, imagine Wigan will probably look to have more possession. But yeah, QPR will be much better with those players back. Not one... like you say, enough, Matt, but the goal scoring as well. I had a little look at that. They've scored more than one goal once this year. That was in the 2-2 draw with Reading, 14th of January. Go back further than that. The last time they did it was the 2-1 reverse fixture over Wigan, which is in October. So there's a distinct lack of goals. That's 11 home games ago. And I know they're away this weekend, but they need to start creating more, need to start scoring more if they're going to get those two wins that they need. Charlton went down with 48 points 2019-20. Mm. I think 48 points will be enough this year. So therefore, I agree with Gareth Ainsworth where the wins are going to come from. Right now, having not played for a fortnight, I can't tell you, but I'm encouraged with the players that are back. And hopefully this will be a better display. And hopefully the last 2 weeks has given Gareth Ainsworth an opportunity to come up with a better plan than he's shown in the last couple of years.
Laird coming back will be big, won't it? Obviously, aside from Willock and Chair, because I do think they've been really short of fullback. Queen's Park Rangers, I think both teams have played two up front in the game. Both teams will probably play with a back three. Maloney's moved to that recently for Wigan, 3-4-1-2. So they'll probably match each other up. I mean, for the loser, I mean, if it's Wigan, if Wigan get beat, that's probably them done. But if Queen's Park Rangers get beat, then, you know, panic could start to set in. It's a really big game, this one.
The silver lining is I'll be most concerned about Huddersfield, right? Middlesbrough, Watford, Blackburn, Swansea, Sunderland is their next five games. They have got a horrific run in. Neil Warnock or no Neil Warnock. Yeah, you have to factor in that, because sometimes you just look at QPR and you think, oh, where are they going to get the wins from? But they've still got the cushion of, 6 points? I think I'm right in saying that. So, yeah, Huddersfield aren't going to win many games. But, yeah, QPR will want to obviously take care of business themselves and have it in their own hands.
It looks like a tight one. Our friends at Quinbet have got Wigan 7-5 to win, QPR 2-1 on the draw, 11-5. If we go into League One, where it is incredibly tight, Sheffield Wednesday looked like they were on a downward turn. They might be feeling a bit better, having pinched a point at Cheltenham on Wednesday with a couple of late goals. Plymouth leading the way with 80 points, Wednesday on 79. Then you've got Ipswich in third place on 75, but they have a game in hand and they go to the East Midlands this weekend. I'm labelling this one the Country Life Derby, as the Rams of Derby County take on the Tractor Boys of Ipswich Town. Sam, we mentioned that you were at Peterborough last weekend, see Derby slump to a second successive 2-0 defeat, a third defeat in four games. A blip, a wobble, doesn't really matter, does it? But they're clinging on to their playoff place by a point. Paul Warne said, without trying to positive spin it like it's Disney World, I think it gives us something to build on this week. So he wasn't that rattled by the performance at Peterborough, but they're going to need to be at their absolute best here, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely wobble territory, right? Three defeats in four. That's bigger than a blip. Not scored in the last two. Yet at halftime on Saturday, you would have been really encouraged, despite not having a great, you know, caliber of chance on the Peterborough goal. They're by far the better side. And, you know, all those characteristics of a Paul Warne side that you would expect were really evident. The intensity that they play with, snapping into challenges. It was a good pitch for midfield players to be flying in. They closed incredibly well from the front. Darren Ferguson actually acted, you know, his left-hand side was getting absolutely tortured by Mendes Lang and the Derby right back. So he went to a three really early. They were back four with and without the ball. Derby were better. Peterborough didn't have that pass to kind of beat Derby's press. And when he put the third centre half in, Nathan Thompson, as it was in the first half, already there was an opportunity for him to play a little bit more. That out ball was more evident. And it was a really good tactical switch. It got better for Peterborough, a little bit higher in the second half as well. I think it was his first goal for Peterborough that capped a really fine victory, a great turnaround. But yeah, Derby just not at it in the second half. Didn't really create anything. I think that's a big concern for them. It's as quiet as I've seen McGoldrick. So I think, you know, maybe that's somewhere where there may be a change, not necessarily bringing McGoldrick out of the side, but getting someone closer to him so he can drop into the little spaces and be that creative spark. But yeah, they're struggling a little bit to get over the line. I think there's not much between them and Peterborough in terms of the running. So I don't think we can read too much into that, but this is a huge game against Ipswich. I think it would be a statement for either side to win this. Ipswich won at Bolton recently during this brilliant run of six games, which they've just swatted everyone to one side. They've been magnificent. The influx of players, I think, in January, Clark, Hurst, Broadhead, that has just given them a little extra couple of percent to do what they've been doing recently. So, yeah, still not fully convinced about Ipswich against the better sides in the division. I went on record a few weeks ago to saying I think they'd go up, and got a little bit of stick from Ipswich fans. So I'm hoping they do the business here against Derby, and they'll put themselves in a brilliant position to be one of those automatically promoted sides once more. So this is a big game for both. I would expect to see what I saw in the first half at Peterborough, but I expect Ipswich to probably navigate that Derby press a lot better. And Kieran McKenna's been speaking about the statistics that back up his philosophy, why they play out, how important Christian Walton is to be the extra man, the goalkeeper, when they're trying to play out, especially when opposing sides go man for man, which I think Accrington and Burton did recently. So the stats all suggest that Ipswich overcome that type of pressure. And this is probably one of the most intensive games they're going to get all season. So should be a cracker.
Sam, I've got a question for you. You're going to hate it, but I don't care. Who's going to win the title in League One? Because obviously we've had everything change around in the space of a week or so with Sheffield Wednesday. Barnsley suddenly had a bit of hope. Yeah, who's going to finish top of the pile, do you reckon?
Well, I'm just going to completely contradict myself from what I said the last few weeks when we did the predictions. I looked at Sheffield Wednesday's fixtures this morning. Clarkey. And despite the last week, I'm going to go for them. I'm going to go for them based on the fixtures and based on what they did last night. I didn't see the game. That could prove to be a bit of a turning point. And I don't think they play... I think they play Derby. That's the only team that Sheffield Wednesday face who are anywhere near it. So for that and that only, I think they might find their stride now.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to apply Sam's logic of fixtures. Not that you asked me, Clarkie, but I'm going to go Plymouth. They've got Morecambe, Lincoln, Exeter, Shrewsbury, Cambridge, Bristol Rovers, Burton and Port Vale. A lot of those are teams without that much to play for. So
it's a very good point.
I'm so pleased you didn't ask me for second place. I can just lay low on that plan.
Well, the fact that Sheffield Wednesday and Plymouth have got fairly favourable run-ins kind of dampens the enthusiasm of Ipswich fans, I guess, who are suddenly cock-a-hoop because of what's happened to Sheffield Wednesday. That, you know, all eyes have been on them. They're like, we're on an amazing winning run. We're going to go up top two now. But based on what you two guys have said, they're still maybe up against it. It's going to be so good.
What I said a few weeks ago, though, right? Correct me if I'm wrong, was that Ipswich were the best team. And would you disagree with that, having seen the last six games? And I, again, caveat it with the only real standout result was the 2-0 at Bolton. They've taken care of business when you'd expect them to, but you wouldn't argue now. Maybe that's slightly harsh on Plymouth, but seeing what's happened to Wednesday in the last week.
Yeah, no, I think Ipswich do play the most sort of sophisticated brand of football. I think they've got great squad depth, tactically excellent. The only thing that holds Ipswich back is actually their record against teams at the top end of the table. That's where they've struggled big time, isn't it? So we'll see. We'll see what they're made of between now and the end of the season. This is a big game against Derby. If they can win this one, that momentum will be massive.
I've gone too early already. Like, I'm just preempting that. I'm going to get stick when Derby win 4-0.
Well, look, I swear I didn't look this up before I made my Plymouth claim, but according to Quinbet, in terms of winning League One, Plymouth are even, so they're the favourite.
Wow.
Sheffield 6-5, Ipswich 5-2, and if you fancy an outsider, that's Barnsley at 20-1. But yeah, evens for Plymouth, we shall see. Right then, elsewhere in League One, a repeat of last season's playoff semi-final at Adams Park, Wycombe Wanderers welcoming NK Dons. This time around, the Chairboys are 3 points off the top six, whilst the Dons are only 4 points above the relegation zone. Trying to get a handle, Clarkey, on Matt Bloomfield's start to life as the head Chairboy. And, I mean, it's kind of hard to do that, isn't it? Because it's pretty steady. Played 6, 1-2, drawn 2, lost 2.
Yeah, exactly. It's been a mixed bag so far. I looked at the starting 11s from the playoff semi-final from last year, and I got to say that Wycombe are a lot weaker now than they were then. I don't think there's anybody new in the side at the moment that would have got into last year's team, in my opinion. So I don't think Matt Bloomfield's got as strong a hand to work with as Gareth Ainsworth did last year. So no, I think they'll be hard pushed, if I'm honest, to get into the playoffs, given the quality of the teams around them. And obviously that win for Peterborough last weekend will have lifted their morale and hopes for sure. I think this is an awkward game for them, actually, against MK Dons, who I looked at their 11, and obviously it's very different. No Scott Twine, no Troy Parrott, but they've still got a decent side. They're still a strong starting 11, MK Dons. And I do think that Mark Jackson, the head coach, has got something about him. What I admire at the moment is his willingness to compromise his own beliefs just in order to get results, because he was brought in to continue the MK Dons way, to play good football, expansive, passing, possession stuff. They want their teams to control matches and play a certain brand of football, but needs must. And they are grinding it out big time, playing some pretty dull football at the moment. And they've won 3 1-0s in a row against fellow relegation rivals, Cambridge, Accrington and Morecambe. And who would have thought this a year ago? In all of those games against Cambridge, Accrington and Morecambe, they had less of the ball than the opposition, yet they won 1-0. In all of those games. So well done to Jackson and to MK for finding a different way. And I think it's just a case of surviving. And then in the summer, when he gets a pre-season Jackson, I think we'll see a very different looking MK Dons side next year.
Yeah, I agree with everything Clarkie said. I think it's been such a contrast to what we witnessed from MK Dons last season, especially the last few weeks. But results are all important at this stage. I don't know if you saw it, but there was a on Wickham, there was a passage of play from them away at Bristol Rovers the other day, I think, which led to one of their goals. And yeah, I think it's a really interesting time for Wickham. And credit to Matt Bloomfield for being quite bolshy, actually, and trying to introduce a little bit more football so early in a job which he'd have been not reluctant to take, but he'd have known how successful Gareth Ainsworth had been clearly. He'd known that there's been a blueprint there to get success, none more so than against MK Dons in the playoffs last season when they did a real job on then Liam Manning's side. So this is a fascinating time. Whether they can make it or not, I'm not sure. They seem to have been in this kind of position all season. What I will say, though, I think it's four out of the next six, something like that, against the basically basement sides in the division. So it is now or never, really, for Wycombe Wanderers. They need to take care of their business and hope that they can force their way into the playoffs. But fascinating to see Matt Bloomfield probably doing what I didn't expect him to do, really.
Yeah, on that clip. But didn't they fast forward a lot of the passes and it was zipping around? That's it. Yeah, it was a really good team goal for sure. I had a stat that I wanted to chuck out there. Probably put people off of maybe backing Wickham to go up. In terms of their XG against in open play, so this is the quality of the chances that they give to the opposition in open play, Wickham. They're ranked 21st in the division. They've got an awful, you know, they're giving up a lot of quality chances. MK Dons, who have been around the relegation zone all season, are ranked 12. Yet, Wickham have conceded 9 fewer goals in open play than MK Dons. So work that one out. Maybe they've had a touch of luck along the way. That's I guess where that stat is pointing. But look, it doesn't really matter. It's what they do from here on in that counts, isn't it?
Well, Wickham certainly had plenty of luck against MK Dons last season. They met 5 times. Dons won 4 of them, but Wickham managed to get through in the playoff semi-final. So they got their business done when it really mattered. It is the Papa John's Trophy / EFL Trophy final on Sunday. It's Bolton against Plymouth at Wembley. Sam's going to be there, so he's going to tell us all about that one on next week's show. In League Two, meanwhile, Stockport v Salford City on Friday night. Is it a derby? They're only 19 miles apart. Doesn't feel like one to me. Tweet us if you like, at EFL Watler, if you've got an opinion on that. What is for sure is that they will meet under the Friday night lights, separated by just a point and a place in the table. Sam, if I had to press you on it, who do you think will have the best chance of going up out of these two, Stockport or Salford?
Oh, that's a good question. That's an unbelievably difficult one to call. I'd say Stockport, but maybe only just. I would not be surprised if one of these got the automatic and won the playoffs. I've really liked both of these sides. And I think the statistics back it up, really. Stockport, best team over the last 12. Clarkie's favourite gauge on the season.
It's a great gauge.
Quarter of the season. Salford 20 points.
Not technically a quarter, though, is it? It's not.
No,
48 games in a season.
But you catch my drift. Smaller sample size, 6 games. Salford, second most points. So both in really good form. 1 defeat in 12 for Stockport at Barrow. There has been a little bit of a lack of goals with Stockport, but I think 1 defeat in 12 shows you that it's nothing too much to worry about. If Madden and Wootton can start going again, start firing again, I think there's still an opportunity. Like this really, I think, really strong side, play good football, have got an opportunity of getting that third position, especially seeing how woeful Carlisle were last time out against Gillingham. So they've got a good chance. And Salford, I think there's been a bit of a change there. I've spoken about it a few times. Forward, mobility, real pace through Bolton, Hendry, Barry. They had McElhenney back involved. Remember him? Back involved at the weekend. And then he's got this luxury at the moment, Neil Wood, of introducing Matty Smith as the plan B. And he's coming on and notching goals as well. So I think this is going to be aesthetically the best game in League Two at the weekend. I think they're two of the best sides in the division right now, maybe not across the entirety of the season, but to answer the question, I wouldn't be surprised if these are playing in League One next year. Big shout, but I don't think there's many teams better than them in the division right now.
Yeah, Salford have scored the most goals in League Two, but they haven't kept a clean sheet in their last 10, so it's going to finish 0-0 then by that logic, 6-1.
27 goals in 6 games. 27 goals in 6 games.
Yeah,
I don't know if that can be bettered anywhere, can it? Manchester City, maybe?
It's pretty impressive. They scored 3 times in each of their last 4 games. Now then, listener, I changed the EFL group chat background to a picture of Steve Evans cuddling his dog some time ago. Neither Sam nor Adrian a past comment on it. Yeah, I couldn't work out how to change the group profile picture. That's what it ended up defaulting to. But the lads have quite rightly just ignored it because it looks a little strange. This all leads me into today that Northampton are playing Stevenage this weekend. It's second versus third. Some massive games in the EFL this weekend, aren't they? Crikey. Cobblers unbeaten, won their last 3-0, haven't lost in the last 7 games. Do you make them favourites here then against your old team, Adrian?
I do, yeah. 5 wins in 7 for Northampton. All of those wins were clean sheet wins. And the front guys are back on form, aren't they? Hoskins, Pinnock, Apare, all contributing, all scoring goals. I think they're having a great season. Lots of different formations as well for John Brady this year. They've not been married to one way of playing. They've been tactically adaptable. And as they always are, Northampton, and I'm going right the way back to when I was playing, they've always been like this. They're just amazing at set pieces. They've got 18 goals from corners and free kicks this year. Stevenage have got 16, by the way. So every chance we'll see some goals from a dead ball situation this weekend. The return game was a cracker, unexpectedly so. Northampton won 3-2 at Broadhall Way, or the Lamex Stadium, whatever it's called these days. It was a bit of a thriller. Not quite as convinced this one will be the same. Stevenage are wobbling. And I know what Sam is saying. If a team's going to drop out of the top three, I think it's likely to be Stevenage, whose form has been patchy. And I worry that Stockport or Salford might nip in ahead of them. I do, because I don't fancy them in this game. And I'll tell you why I don't fancy them in this game as well. Borough have played 6 games away to the current top 10, and they haven't scored a single goal yet. 6 games against top 10 sides away from home, no goals. And this is a team that's been in the hunt for the title for the majority of this campaign. So, yeah, they've got to find a way to be more dangerous on the road against their immediate rivals. Hard to explain that stat, but it's there in black and white. So I think Northampton probably to win this one 1-0 via a corner. That's probably how we see this one ended.
Boiler, Salford fans, you haven't scored 27 goals in 6 games. Where on earth have I got that from? They've scored 18 goals in the last 6 games. Manty, all comps, 23. So I wasn't too far off with City. Sorry, Salford. I've added 9 onto your total there, guys.
They don't need them at the moment. Don't worry about it. All right, that's the weekend previewed. Next today, the return of the scouting report. Back and better than ever then. Our first scouting report is on a whole team. Sam was on hand midweek to see AFC Wimbledon end their 12-game winless run with a 2-0 victory against Walsall at Plough Lane. Back to basics, wasn't it, Sam, from looking at the 2-minute highlights that they put up, both goals coming from corners. If you get those right, you got a chance of winning games, as we've discussed on the pod already today.
Yeah, absolutely. And it really felt that goal wasn't going to come. I think there's a kind of sense of inevitability maybe for the supporters and the staff. And me sat there as a kind of neutral. Obviously, I played for Walsall as well once upon a time, but yeah, full transparency that obviously my mate's Johnny Jackson. So I think he's been stood there this season and just seen chances go begging. And it was kind of the story of the season that I thought was playing out in front of me. I thought they were going to be wasteful in front of goal. Had a brilliant opening 15 minutes, created loads of good chances, couldn't get it. Walsall had a couple of half chances towards the tail end of the first half, but they reset at halftime and they were far and away the best in the second half. And my first kind of thing that I noticed was, I mean, either I am getting so old or this is an incredibly young AFC Wimbledon team. And it definitely is the latter. Although I am.
It might be a bit of both, yeah, in fairness to you.
Last week. Such a side. Nathan Broom in goal. I think he's got his opportunity because of an injury. He was brilliant, made a couple of outstanding saves. And I remember Jacko being on the podcast and talking about Jack Curry and Isaac Ogunderi, the fullbacks earlier in the season, that he had to put them in because he had injuries. He didn't want to fast track them so quickly. Those two were brilliant. I definitely highlight them. And the striker, El Hamadi, scored 7 goals in 10 starts now. He came on as a sub. They signed him from Wickham, 21-year-old. He looks like the real deal. Just his awareness as soon as he came on, the flicks he was winning. He replaced a lad called Seiko Geno, who's on loan from Cambridge. And I think that kind of shows you where they're at. They've got another midfield player, Little, who's on loan from Forest Green. They lost, obviously, Towler, Magoma, Asau earlier in the season. And they're missing Pell, Giacimi, Pierce, Davison, Gunter, the whole spine of that side, all the experienced guys, not available right now. So I think it's been a really tricky month or two to navigate for AFC Wimbledon. This was a pretty complete display. Hopefully they can go on a little bit of a run now to finish with a bit of momentum, but it was a most welcome victory. Walsall, on the flip side, woeful. Woeful. And Mike Flynn pulled no punches after the game. He was incredibly disappointed. 300 fans travelled from Walsall. Tuesday, wet day, fair old trek. FC Wimbledon fans actually gave them an applause when they announced the attendance, but they looked so lacking in creativity. Defensively, they were quite solid first half. The shape was quite hard for FC Wimbledon to navigate, but no thrust. And he really, really caned them post-match. So sad to see, really, because I hope Walsall would turn the corner with that appointment and some of the signings. But yeah, they need to reset again in the summer, and we'll have to wait and see if Mike Flynn's the man to lead them forward.
Big win for Wimbledon then, but some worries for Walsall. Right, Adrian, you're sticking with tradition. You're scouting a player, namely Barnsley's Luke O'Connell.
Yep, saw him in the flesh against Sheffield Wednesday. I was really, really impressed with him. He's 21. He was a bit of a whiz kid at Bolton, got signed by Celtic. Went for good money, never made a start for Celtic. Had a couple of successful loan spells. He's landed at Barnsley, defensive midfield player. And I like what I see. Shirt tucked into the shorts for starters. We're all over that. Bit old school, Luke O'Connell. He covers the spaces really well. He's nimble across the turf. So he's really neat and tidy. But what really stood out for me in such a fast and frenetic match was his calmness on the ball. He's able to put his foot on it and just create a little bit of time for himself. And I think that's the sign of a quality player. He's got 6 assists and 2 goals this season. Every single one of them has come with his left foot. He feeds balls into the box with real quality. Yeah, he's got a lovely, lovely left foot. And there's been a remarkable symmetry about his 6 assists this season. It's amazing, really. 3 of them have been near identical outswinging left foot corners. 2 of them have been pretty much identical outswinging wide free kicks from the left-hand side. And the other one has come from a recycled free kick, which he whipped in from the right-hand side as an in-swinger. So all of the goals have effectively come from set pieces that Luke O'Connell has made this season. He's 2 goals are near identical as well, where the opponents have cleared across. He's picked up the second ball, chested it, and volleyed it in from between 22 and 30 yards. He's got 2 absolute corkers, O'Connell. At 21, very mature. I think he could be a future captain, and I certainly would see him operating in the top 2 divisions in English football. He's got something about him for sure.
Right, that's just about going to do us for today. Before we leave you, remember the guys at QueenBet have enhanced their UK welcome offer, where you can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It's for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at queenbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this pod. It's 18+. And remember, always gamble responsibly. Remember also, too, if you like the show, tell somebody about it. Leave us a nice review on iTunes. Give us a rating wherever you listen. That kind of stuff really helps us out. You can also follow us on social media. On Twitter, we are at EFL What The. Bit easier on TikTok and Instagram, where we are at What The EFL. We'll be back in our regular Monday slot next week. Join us for that if you can. Until then, thanks to Stephen for joining us earlier, and to Adrian and Sam as well, but mostly to you for listening. We'll catch up with you again soon. Bye for now.